Hello and welcome to a special Donation Coder podcast for the month of September 2006. This month on podcast number 5, we're giving you something a little different. Our intrepid leader Mouser has managed to grab an exclusive interview with none other than David Allen, author of Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity, and the man once described as the Henry Ford of the digital age. In fact, this show is so special that we can't fit it into one session. So part 2 of the interview will be released next week with the Donation Coder Podcast 5.5. And so, without further ado, let's get on with the interview. DonationCoder.com, for connoisseurs of fine software.
This is Jesse Reichler from DonationCoder.com, and I'm speaking today with David Allen, the author of one of the all-time most influential books on personal productivity and time management, a book called Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. Thank you for being with us, David.
Delighted to be here, Jeff. Thanks.
Can you give us just an overview of the Getting Things Done system?
Well, there is a bottom line. To get things done, first of all, you have to define what done means, and you have to define what doing looks like. So a core, I think, a unique aspect of what Getting Things Done is about is it deals with the thought process that has to be applied on your stuff before you actually know what to organize or, you know, can manage that inventory. So, you know, that said, you know, the practical aspect of it is really about a set of best practices about how we collect things that have our attention, how we need to clarify what those things actually mean to us so that then we can, stage three, organize them appropriately so that we can review sort of the whole inventory at any point in time. So we have more of a holistic way to see what all our commitments are at any point in time to then make a choice about what to do. Now, that's sort of the what I call the horizontal, sort of the get control aspect of GTD. Then there's the get perspective aspect of GTD, which is, and you need to make sure you know, have these sort of altitudinal horizons that we mature our conversations on to be able to trust your priorities. You need to know top-level purpose and values. You need to know vision. Then you have, you know, shorter-term goals and objectives. Then you have areas of responsibility, and then you have projects, and then you have actions about all that stuff. So that's kind of the vertical model and part of it as well. So those are the two sort of primary aspects of GTD is let's get control and then get perspective. They tie closely together, but they actually are a little bit of different models.
So let me probe you a little on the first part, on getting control. The thing that, for me, was the most profound, this idea of getting things out of your head. Can you talk about that a little?
Well, you know, from my experience, your head's for having ideas, not for holding them. And, you know, unfortunately, most people seem to have had the habit of having things in your mind and thinking that's a good office. And psychic RAM, as I call it, that space that we tend to hold reminders of the would, could, should, need to's, ought to's, might want to's, might be interesting to me, we start to file that in that sort of subliminal place. As soon as you have more than 7 or 8 things in there, there's a, you know, part of it goes unconscious because your conscious mind can't hold on to all that. So as you start to load that onto your psyche, all those different commitments, there's a part of you that's hanging on to them all. As a matter of fact, there's a part of you that seems to be wanting to do them all right then.
Right.
Which creates this more subtle and subliminal sense of frustration and anxiety, but you can't find the source. You just have this gnawing sense that there's a whole lot of stuff out there and I don't know what it is. And the problem is most people put it in the part of their psyche that's not very good at being able to manage and review and renegotiate. And there's a part of you that then thinks you should be doing all of them all the time. So people walk around in this sort of almost incessant sense of frustration and overwhelm and not really realizing that it's just a mechanical part of the brain that it just doesn't do that very well. So teaching people to offload that, to capture those things in some external form and to train yourself as you make a commitment with yourself that has any interest or meaning that you can't finish in the moment you think of it, training yourself to externalize that is just hugely healthy. And as you say, it makes a big difference.
This is part of the subtitle of the book, which is The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. This is sort of one of the big points, right? That it's not just managing your time. It's sort of being able to relieve the stress of having all these ideas constantly occupying all your time, distracting you.
Sure. And let's be honest. Come on, stress-free, that's a lie. I mean, actually, you know, when you talk about stress-free, you're talking about getting rid of negative stress, which is the truth. And it's not necessary to be in negative stress. I mean, if you never had stress, you'd never grow. If you want to do something you haven't done yet, you've created an automatic stressor. That is, you've created sort of cognitive dissonance. I want to be out of the room. I'm not out of the room. So that creates stress. As a matter of fact, it's the resolution of that stress that gets you out of the room. You know, I want something I don't have yet. I have an intention. I have a desire. I have a goal. And if you haven't reached that yet, there's an irresolution, if you will. Now, as long as I'm positively engaged toward getting toward out of the room, you know, I get up, I start moving, or I'm thinking how I'm going to get out of the room, and I start moving on it, that's actually positive stress. That's what creates expression and expansion in your life. So essentially, resolution of cognitive dissonance is a whole lot of what our whole game is about here. The negative stress says, I want to be out of the room. Oh, damn, but I need to sit here. Oh, damn, but I need to get out of the room. Yeah, but I need to finish this thing. Now you're in negative stress. Now you've created conflict that's irresolvable. Because you've created two things you think you want to do that seem to be in conflict with each other, and there's no resolution happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You can get rid of. I'm not saying it's easy, but that is the kind of thing that you can then, you know, learn how to ameliorate that. And quite frankly, back to your first point, again, if you've got two things on your mind, there's a part of you that thinks you should be doing them both at the same time, and that's, you know, unresolvable stress.
Right. Or even if not telling you to do them at the same time, always worrying about forgetting that you have something to do, or always reminding yourself to think back of all the obligations. So you're taking all this time worrying about reminding yourself about
sure.
things.
Yeah, there's a part of you going, don't forget, Jesse, don't forget, Jesse, don't forget, Jesse, don't forget, Jesse, don't forget,
right.
Jesse. And the reason is because if you're in that state, you've made your psyche your system and not a system. So
right.
A lot of what GDD is about is make a system your system so that it relieves your psyche of the pressure of having to do that, which it does not do very well.
One of the things you talk about, which is the pieces have to be put together for you, and that's part of what your book does, that a natural consequence of this approach is that you must have a system for reviewing this, right? If you're going to offload the stuff and trust that it won't get forgotten, you have to have a review system. Can you talk about that?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, you and I both know compulsive list makers that still walk around with anxiety because they just make the list. They don't look at them.
Right.
So, you know, it's one thing to capture the stuff. And even then, most people capture it and still don't clarify what's on there. Mm-hmm. So they don't actually want to look at their own list because it's a subliminal reminder of decisions they've avoided. So, you know, just making a list is only a very beginning step. That's why that's only step one of five steps of how you master workflow. So getting it out of your head is the first step. But then, yes, you must review it, but not only review it, but you need to be reviewing not just what you first wrote down, but what you need to be doing about what you wrote down. And that's quite another step. Let's say you've got something on your mind like kids, getting your kids onto cruise control for the school year. Okay, so maybe you took the first big step and you wrote down kids and school. Well, fabulous. Now you got kids and school on a list, right?
Right.
Well, how attractive is that to look at? You know, it's why you didn't want to write it down to begin with, because you go, oh, God, there's so much to think about. I don't want to think about it. So now you've written down what you don't want to think about. You know, good. So the second step, you have to train yourself. Once I've written it down, okay, now wait a minute. What does that mean? And there are really two key questions to answer about what things mean, especially if they are actionable. Well, the first question is, look, is there something you need to do about this? And usually that's what you write stuff down about, is stuff you need to do things about. So then there's two questions. What's the outcome you need to be committed to and keep track of until it's finished? And secondly, what's the next action step you need to take to start moving on that? Outcome and action become sort of the zeros and ones of a lot of GDD. What are you trying to accomplish? What would done look like? What's your project here? That's an open box until you cross the T's and dot the I's, and you get to check that off. Maybe that's kids into school on cruise control. You know, okay, and yet there is some point that I'm going to get to where I can go, that is now not something I need to have my attention on because it's all in place. So that's now what I would call a project. That would go on my project list. But then I need to say, okay, what's the very next action step I need to take about that? You know, is that a phone call I need to make? Do I need to sit down with my kids and make a list of supplies they need? What's the very next thing I need to do to get moving on this? And that decision, once you then make that, you'll then generate the stuff that really needs to populate what I would call an organizational system. But again, back to your point, just writing down kids in school is only a very beginning step.
Right. And now, and you make the case that you should right up front, as soon as you can, put that next concrete action, the actionable next step. And as I understand it, part of the reason for doing that is that it now becomes something that you can sort of opportunistically attack when the context comes up or when the opportunity comes up. Can you talk a little bit about what that gives you, that you write up front, writing down an actionable next step?
Sure. Well, what our recommendation is that is if you make a decision about the next action, the very next physical action required, and that will then turn out to be a phone call to make, something to do at your computer, like an email to send or a document to draft or something to review. It could be a website to surf. It could be I need to talk to somebody face-to-face or over the phone about something. It could be, you know, whatever, buy something at the store. So once you get it down that to that very next concrete step, then the idea is that you want to be able to see a reminder of that thing when you could actually do the action.
Right.
In other words, if the next step is buy something at the hardware store, and I know I've got all the information I need, all I need to do is walk in the store and buy it, it doesn't mean I have to go to the store right now. It does mean that when you're out for errands, it'd be a good idea to take a glance at all the stuff you need to do when you're out and about, like stop by the hardware store and pick that up. So as you're driving by the store, come on, that's just pure efficiency. Gee, that's a thing I need to do. Let me go mark something off my list, and you go create a big win for yourself. Wow, I just got it. So that's if that's what you mean, I think that's what you're referring
to. Yes, definitely.
Until I know where doing happens and what doing looks like, I'm missing all kinds of opportunities to do the doing.
Do you think that there's also a part of that process that, number one, opens up, once you force yourself to consider that next action, opens up other ideas or consequences that you wouldn't normally have thought of if you just wrote, you know, take care of kids in school?
Sure. Well, you've sort of skipped forward into a lot of the subtlety of the power of GTD, because it's really about focus. You know, it's not about a list. Lists are very cool things because lists are great focusing tools. I'm at a hardware store. Let me focus on the 16 things I need at a hardware store. Try to do that in your head. It's impossible. So a list is just a focusing tool. Now, you know, once you start to focus on something, back to your first point, you know, I spent literally thousands of hours with some of the busiest, best, and brightest people on the planet, sitting down with them, you know, going through all these piles and all these lists and going, what's the very next action? And true, as you really sort of, you know, demand of yourself that you get very concrete, what does this look like moving on this right now? You know, I'll have somebody, for instance, like a senior executive, write down something like hire, fire, merge, acquire stuff. I mean, that, you know, that as well as get my nine iron fixed. You know, so, you know, it's strange when you do a core dump, you know, get stuff out of people's heads. They sit in somewhat random order. So we will often assist people in collecting them in whatever order they show up. But then we go back through those things and they pick up this thing called, you know, they've got an acquisition they might want to make in terms of their company. You know, I go, so what's the next action? Well, I don't know. You know, great. If you did know, what would it? Well, I guess I need some more input. You know, there's a lot of things, in other words, they've been avoiding thinking about. And forcing themselves to figure out what the action step is starts to get a lot of clarity about what exactly this means. And then they go, oh, wait a minute, that reminds me. And there's always that kind of thing
right.
that starts
and,
to happen.
And let me just interrupt you. Isn't that also tie into the idea of getting things off your mind? Because until you resolve the next step, your brain is going to be spending that background time trying to figure out,
sure.
should I be doing something?
Well,
should I have to remember?
You haven't finished your thinking.
That's right, exactly.
So the next action, that's why that's such a critical piece,
right?
Is that if you don't figure out what the very next step is, there's still some part of your brain, there's a monkey
right.
still on your mind. Call,
right.
wait a minute, so how are you going to do that? How are you going to do that? Where are you going to do that? Where
right.
does that happen? And that'll wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So even if you get down to, I think the next step is set a meeting. And I go, great, how would you set the meeting? Well, I could call them or I could email them and say, decide. And they say, I don't want to decide. I say, well, then if you don't decide, you haven't finished your thinking, and that thing will wake you up at 3 o'clock in the
yeah.
morning. You're going to send them an email. You're going to call them. You're going to, you know, so literally, as dumb as that sounds, that's where there's a lot of profundity that sits inside of this thing. There's sort of magic in the mundane. And when you get down to that level of mundane, practical, operational decision-making, it triggers a ton of you know, healthy thinking and also frees up RAM a ton once you get it down to that level. So what you need to do is give yourself permission to change your mind. You know, so let me make the decision, write it down, and then you change your mind ad hoc. No, let me send them an email. Fine. You know, who cares? But what you've done is you've at least finished your agreement with yourself that I've made the decisions I need to operationally, so I get to go on to other things.
You talk about that a lot. You talk about the idea of negotiating with yourself and being allowed to renegotiate, but you have to You have to do that step. You either have to negotiate that you're not going to do it, or negotiate that you're going to look at it later, but you have to make a sort of contract, and if you don't, bad things happen.
Yeah, well, you know, you can only feel good about what you're not doing when you know what you're not doing.
Right.
The problem is what you're not doing changes every 10 minutes. You know, as you and I are speaking right now, things are piling up on your plate and mine that we don't even know about, and it's stuff we're not doing yet. So how long can you go before you check your voicemail or your email and decide what actions are embedded in all of that and still feel comfortable you could keep on talking to me?
This brings me to the favorite part of the newer of your two books, The Ready for Anything, which tells a story about the dirty secret of your list. Can you tell that story?
You know,
do you know what I'm talking about?
I haven't even looked at it in a long time.
Well, this is where you say that you have a secret about your list, which is some of the best work you've done has been on projects that are not on your list.
Oh, right. Yes, indeed.
And your explanation, which I think shows some of the elegance of the idea, is that Do you want to take it from here, or should I finish up the...
Well, I just know the thought. I mean, the thought is that basically an awful lot of what this does is it allows your brain to relax that all the sort of commitments and open loops that are historical have been tracked. And what that does, though, is it frees up a huge amount of creative energy. And right off of that spin, oftentimes you'll get some of the most interesting and spontaneous ideas just because you're sort of listening to your intuitive,
right,
and you've freed yourself up for your intuitive.
Right. You know you've got the time to do something because you know your obligations, your responsibilities, you know you've got an inventory of what you have to do and what the deadlines are, so you've got the freedom to now do other things.
Well, let's take this back to some healing of major problems out there right now. I mean, one of the biggest issues most people listening to this are dealing with is surprise and interruption. You know, and because of the email beast is out of the barn, that one's coming at everybody fast, as well,
right,
as just all kinds of inputs, and BlackBerries are vibrating, and phones are vibrating. All kinds of things are vibrating and yanking everybody's chain. And I go, well, is it easier to deal with surprise when you have 3,000 backlogged emails you don't know what the hell you're going to do about, or whether that's at zero? Well, that's a pretty simple answer. So that's why when I'm not doing anything else, I'm cleaning up that backlog to zero so that when new input comes in, I can evaluate it against a current and thorough inventory. If you don't know what your historical inventory is, boy, that's a real crapshoot to feel comfortable. Usually what happens is people get frustrated by the interruption, don't have a system to capture and placehold that interruption, so they feel like, well, it is something they probably need to do, so then they go running down it as a rabbit trail, but some part of them feels then, you know, basically uncomfortable because they know there's a lot of other stuff they probably should be doing, and they get mad at the source of the interruption. Wrong answer.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the specifics of handling new incoming stuff? You talk about a 2-minute rule and your recommended filing system.
Well, you know, if people listening to this have read my book, Getting Things Done, you'll know there's a workflow diagram in there that, you know, it looks pretty simple, but there are a lot of miles on those tires in terms of what went into figuring out what you need to figure out as input is coming towards you. So that whole processing and organizing chart is about how do I rapidly make a decision about what this thing means to me. And that's critical because to know whether to file it and what file it goes into determines what does this mean to me. Is this something that I need to move on? Is this something I might want to move on and be reminded of in the future? Or is this something I just need as reference? And making those kind of key, simple, but very important distinctions about what the specific stuff is. And that's then going to start to tell you how to get organized. Now, as you decide, first of all, what's the next action on it? You have to decide, is it an actionable item? So you don't even get to what's the next action if you say, no, it's just reference. There's nothing I want to do on this. I'm just going to store it. In which case, you want to then shunt it into just the storage system, and I can come back to filing. But you ask first about, for instance, the 2-minute rule. But if you decide there is a next action, you can finish the action in 2 minutes or less. If you're ever going to do the thing at all, do it right then, because it's just a pure efficiency factor. If you're ever going to do it, it'll take you longer to stack it, track it, and look at it again than it would be to finish it the first time it's in your face. So once you've decided the next action, you have then the 3 D's to decide to either do it right then, delegate it to somebody else to do if you can, or defer it into your system and then park it as a reminder of something to see later on when you have other discretionary time blocks.
Right. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is the filing of items, because I've noticed a sort of dilemma with paper filing, which is you talk about the value of filing things where you're going to access them in the right context. So the example of putting all the phone calls you have to make sort of together so that when you're near a phone or making phone calls, you can access them.
Right.
But one of the difficulties if you're using a paper system is the idea that you've got multiple contexts and a piece of paper or an item that has to go in one place unless you want to duplicate it.
And well, how do you... I'm sort of jumping in here because you're really on... it sounds simple, but there's actually quite a bit of discrete subtlety in terms of deciding what that piece of paper means. If, for instance, I'm keeping a list of calls to make, when you say file, you know, if you were using a low-tech system, let's say low-tech meaning I'm just using file folders to remind me of the work I need to do, you could have a folder called calls and, you know, all the different little scraps and pieces of paper in there would represent different calls you need to make. That's actually a very efficient system, especially if you're somewhat desk-bound. It's very fast to jot a note on a piece of paper and throw it in a file. And then when you get to a phone, you pull out the folder and you can sift through the pieces of paper, find the hottest phone call you want to make.
But what if the phone call is part of a project?
Well, if the phone call is part of a project, in other words, I've got action items organized by where they happen, not by what they're about.
Right.
So you're talking about context-driven action list as opposed to project-driven action list. Well, if you had a relational database where you could tie them both ways, that's cool. That'd be nice because it is nice to see them both ways. However, the truth is, if you had to choose, and for the most part you do, like, do I want to see all my phone calls in one list, or do I want all my phone calls separated into all my project files? Well, you know, think about it for a second. Well, duh. You know, if you get to a phone and wanted to make all the calls, you wanted to look at all the calls you should make, you're going to have to pull out 43 folders or 75 folders to find all the phone calls embedded in them.
Right.
You won't even do that.
Right.
But once you're down, that requires that you be down to the very discrete trigger action on the thing. Most people aren't even down to that level, and all the other thinking about projects should be organized by the project because they're not actually an action step. They're topical ideas, components, sequences, collateral material, etc., and all that probably should be organized by the project. But once you're down to, oh, now I need to call Bill about that, the truth is you want to stick that somewhere that you see when you're at a phone. And that's a whole lot easier to see by context.
Would you put a reference to it in the project file, saying, you know, I've put some calls I have to make related to this?
No.
Or are you just going through, are you reviewing your list so often that you won't?
Well, that's the big key. The big key is your brain still has to connect the dots in terms of your system. You know, a lot of people, once they start to catch the magic of GTD, want to then have their brain do nothing.
Right.
You know, they want to automate then everything so they don't even have to be conscious. Well, I don't think that works. And I'm as lazy as anybody else. I'd love to automate as much as possible. But the truth is that the subtleties of all these interrelationships is too subtle for any system yet. And that your brain still has to connect the dots. That's why you'll see, and you I'm sure you know, that the big success factor is the weekly review that we coach people about. You need to review all your stuff as regularly as you need to review it all to keep it all out of your head. But the truth is that once a week, if people sat down and looked at everything, meaning all your projects, all the components of those projects, make sure you've got action items current now on any moving part, you know, you'll be so familiar with what's in your system, you could recognize it from across a crowded room. So it's not like this is stuff you fill out and leave on a shelf and then it sort of makes your life work for you. It's much more like creating, you know, somewhat crude but important placeholders in front of you so that your mind can then sort of move between the different placeholders instead of trying to be the placeholder. And that's really the big difference there. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it does. Let's talk about the one issue that I've seen raised in our discussion forums. As you know, we're doing a sort of tour of different systems and talking about different pieces of different ones. And one of the things that comes up is the issue of priorities, labeling things with priorities. And you make a big point about this. You have a real position on this, don't you?
Well, my real position is absolutely. I couldn't agree more. As a matter of fact, talking to me right now, Jesse, should be the most important thing you need to be doing in your life to fulfill your destiny as a human spirit on the planet. So I hope you've lined all that up.
Right.
Right. So I'm just saying, you know, what was the priority that you stuck on this on your calendar? You either wanted to do this or you didn't, right? Now, what caused you to even stick it on your calendar to begin with, you know, comes from a lot of different levels of focus and a lot of different thinking. So the truth is that we have, as I've laid out, like six horizons at least, somewhat arbitrarily, but they are somewhat different levels of thinking, and that all have to be mature before you can trust your priorities. I mean, frankly, you don't know which email to answer first unless you know why you're on the planet and what's really important to you. So I couldn't agree more that that's a great conversation to have with yourself. I just say figure it out before you die. You'd be in the fast lane. You know, so everybody's got a lot of work to sit down and really figure out what they're really about, what they're really trying to do, and what's really, really important. That still means you still have to go to the head, you still have to eat lunch, and you still have to take the kids to school, and you've got a lot of other commitments that are on you right now. So I'm just saying that the whole mix of priorities is a whole lot more complex and subtle and interactive than ABC 1-2-3. Now, there was value in that because, quite frankly, most of the world 100 years ago never even gave itself permission to think that it could choose what to do when it got to work. Work was defined for everybody. So the ABC stuff and the 1-2-3 stuff was all designed to help people start to begin to think that, yes, there's some things you do that are going to give you a higher payoff and have higher value if completed than other things. So that's a relatively speaking, relative to the history of work, that's a, you know, that is a really new concept, you know, to spread out to, you know, all of us worker bees in the world out here. But the truth is, as Drucker, you know, Peter Drucker sort of identified many years ago, wait a minute, we're moving into a whole different world where everybody has to be responsible for executive thinking. So the idea of prioritizing is absolutely a critical one. You know, it has to be. My point is that, look, if you try to structure your system for priorities, you're going to lie to yourself and it's not going to be real. I mean, the truth is that people have estimated you have 50,000 thoughts a day. Well, you have the freedom to think about whatever you want 50,000 times a day. You know, so that's how many choices you have in terms of your priority. And I don't care how important the proposal is, as soon as you have to eat lunch, priority shift. So
right.
That the point is, it's just more subtle and sophisticated and more ever-changing. See, in a way, functionally, I have two priorities, what I'm doing and everything else.
Is there a danger, though, that if you've got 100 projects and you haven't sort of prioritized them explicitly, is there a danger that your brain is going to be wasting time trying to figure out which should I do next, which of these?
Well, here's the thing. You can't do a project.
Right, but even if we look at the first action of each project,
right,
do we have a problem that now we've got 100 potential first actions and we don't have a, and our brain is going to be trying to figure out what's the best for me to move forward in my career?
Well,
or my,
you have to decide whether you've committed to too many things or not. That's up to you.
Right. Okay, so this gets to your idea of once it's in your to-do, it sort of has equal, once you've put it there, you have to do it.
No, once you put it there, you have to acknowledge that that was something you said you might want to do and constantly renegotiate that it's okay, you're not doing it.
Right. Is there some...
Jesse, people get mad at me for their list. I'm like, I'm sorry, it ain't my list.
This is where the Tickler file comes in. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, there's a Chamber of Commerce event coming up on April the 6th. I think April the 3rd will be soon enough for me to decide whether or not I want to go. So I'm going to put this little invitation I got in the mail from the Chamber in a Tickler file, so on April 3rd, I'll see it. No need to bother myself with it until then. I don't want to make a decision until then. But on April 3rd, I want this thing to show up.
So it's a reminder to yourself, sort of future in future time, so you don't have to worry about it until then. Got it.
All right, well, that's about all the time we have for this month. Part 2 of our special Donation Coder podcast can be heard next week on podcast number 5.5. Visit www.donationcoder.com for details. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on the Donation Coder Podcast.